for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And it's 11 a.m. You are tuned to KBOO in Portland. And coming up, Health Watch is off today, but instead, we'll hear a program from the series Your Own Health and Fitness with host Lena Berman. She speaks with Dr. Balls Fry from the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University about the flaws in research design on vitamin supplements. And thanks for listening to KBOO Radio. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. And now we will go to Your Own Health and Fitness with host Lena Berman.
Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeffrey Fawcett. We come to you every week with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health in the environment.
And I also need to tell you that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeffrey Fawcett. We come to you every week with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health in the environment. The popular use of vitamin supplementation is regularly attacked in the conventional media. Take the recent article about the uselessness of multivitamins. What are these reports based on? Is it credible research? Not according to today's guest, Dr. Balls Fry, director of the Linus Pauling Institute. It may not surprise you that vitamins are studied using the same methods as testing pharmaceuticals. In an article last year in the journal Nutrients, he wrote the article Myths, Artifacts, and Fatal Flaws with Alexander Michaels. And that in that paper, they unpack study approaches used in research on vitamin C that can lead to incorrect conclusions about its actions. Mammal physiology is very complex. There are numerous pathways and cascades involved in the metabolism and actions of nutrients. As well, each body, human or other, is unique. Creating a cell culture in a dish is fraught with unintended consequences, and so is working in a living body. So many questions that should have been answered before starting are ignored. Join us this hour as we explore how these precious nutrients can effectively be studied and what new things have already been revealed about when and how to use them. I'm joined today to do a show that I'm calling Flawed Vitamin Research by Dr. Balls Fry, B-A-L-Z-F-R-E-I, Balls Fry. He's a distinguished professor of biochemistry and biophysics and director and endowed chair of the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University at Corvallis, Oregon. Dr. Fry's research interests include the role of vitamins, micronutrients, and other dietary factors in promoting optimal health and preventing disease, in particular atherosclerosis and heart disease, the role of oxidative stress and inflammation in human health and disease, and the health benefits of dietary supplements. He has made important contributions to our understanding of the biological mechanisms and health effects of vitamin C and E, coenzyme Q10, lipoic acid, and flavonoids. Dr. Fry has published over 200 scientific papers that have been cited over 20,000 times by his peers. His research has been continuously funded since 1993 with grants from the National Institutes of Health, and he has received numerous awards. Dr. Fry studied at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland, where he received his doctorate in biochemistry. He completed postdoctorate fellowship at the University of California, Berkeley, with Dr. Bruce N. Ames, and then was an assistant and an assistant professor, respectively, at Harvard School of Public Health and Boston University School of Medicine. He joined the Linus Pauling Institute as director and endowed chair in 1997, and now he's joining us, and we're very pleased to have you. Welcome, Dr. Fry.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm really excited to talk to you. I found the paper quite remarkable, partially because it reminded me of the incredible complexities of how we utilize substances, particularly micronutrients, in our bodies. How many different things have to take place, you don't know always in each given situation what's going to happen. So,
right.
So I'm also, you know, I'm under the impression that vitamin research has been going on certainly since the mid-1900s. Mm-hmm. Is that so?
Yes. Obviously, you know, there has been a lot of interest in vitamins for a long time. I think the way we look at vitamins has changed somewhat over time. You know, initially we had the deficiency diseases that pointed to the absolutely critical role of these vitamins in the prevention of these deficiency diseases. For example, you know, vitamin C deficiency causes scurvy, which killed hundreds of thousands of sailors in the 18th and 17th century, and that cause of that was eventually uncovered by James Lind, who was a surgeon, a British surgeon, and he simply found that giving the sailors orange juice or lime juice could completely prevent scurvy and cure scurvy. So initially, the way these vitamins were discovered was through their deficiency diseases. And now the focus is more on the role of these vitamins potentially in also helping to lower the risk of chronic diseases.
Yeah,
quite
indeed.
Different from their actual biological functions in the body.
Now, you chose vitamin C to cover in this article, and it is an extensive article. It's very conclusive.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. Why did you choose vitamin C particularly? Is it because there's so many assumptions about how it works and so many mistakes about the way it's studied?
Yes, that's certainly part of the reason. It's also, you know, because of Linus Pauling, the most talked about and most popular dietary supplement. And there have been many, many studies on vitamin C that are seriously flawed, and so we chose that as an example to point out all these issues in general with vitamin research as it is applied to humans in particular.
So before we unpack your study about what's wrong with the way vitamin research is conducted, why don't you give people some idea of what you have come to learn about the benefits of vitamin C, because they're not exactly the same as the ones that people assume.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are the known biological functions of vitamin C in a number of enzyme reactions. And vitamin C, also called ascorbic acid, basically acts as a cofactor or a co-substrate in these enzyme reactions. For example, the synthesis of collagen, which is the substance that, you know, forms the glue in our tissues and holds the cells together and the bones and all the other tissues, the collagen synthesis requires vitamin C. And if you don't have enough vitamin C, your collagen synthesis is impaired, and as a consequence, you develop the signs of scurvy. So your teeth are falling out, your wounds are not healing, all these important processes that require normal collagen function will be impaired. There are other important known biological functions of vitamin C. One of them is in the synthesis of a compound called carnitine. Now, carnitine is very important for turning fat into energy because the fat needs to get into mitochondria in our cells, and the mitochondria are the power plants in your cells. So vitamin C makes a molecule that helps fat get into mitochondria for energy production. And if you don't have enough vitamin C, you cannot burn your fat efficiently in your mitochondria, and therefore you have less energy. And indeed, an early sign of vitamin C deficiency before you develop the classical symptoms of scurvy is lassitude and fatigue. And this is because you don't burn your fat as efficiently as you would in the presence of adequate amounts of vitamin C. And then there are some other functions in neurotransmitter synthesis, all known, functions of vitamin C related to its enzyme functions. But then what I have been doing a lot of work on is the antioxidant function of vitamin C. Mm-hmm. And this is really separate from the function it has in collagen synthesis or carnitine synthesis. Vitamin C is a very strong antioxidant. What does that mean? Well, it can prevent the oxidation of different molecules in your body, in particular protein, DNA, and fat can all get oxidized. Like if fat goes rancid, that is an oxidation process. And if that happens in your arteries, that can contribute to atherosclerosis and heart disease. If your DNA becomes oxidized, then it causes mutations and potentially start cancer. And so the idea is there that vitamin C, acting as a strong antioxidant, can prevent these oxidation processes from happening and therefore can lower your risk of heart disease or certain types of cancer. And so this is kind of the new research now that focuses more on the functions of vitamins, or here in particular vitamin C, that are separate from the functions it has in preventing deficiency disease.
You know, I want to really get into how you did your paper, because it's a fascinating window into how vitamin research is done and why it's a problem. Mm-hmm. Why these sensationalistic articles that appear in the paper that warn us off of vitamins are so silly.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that when you look at the reports on deaths from toxic substances, there are no deaths from taking vitamins. I think last year there was one person who is reported to have died from something happening with a vitamin, but we don't know the details of that. It's just
right.
A report.
Yeah.
One, and if you compare that to anything else, it's really remarkable. Anyway, in the end of your article, although you are somehow, still the spawn of Linus Pauling, at least, the heir of his work, mm-hmm. he was advocating very large doses of vitamin C. He believed very strongly in it. And at the end of your article, you say something that actually made me I thought, wait a minute, I've been advocating for years that people replete their dose of vitamin C at least twice a day, they try for maybe 1,000 twice a day. And you're saying, no, really, if you look at how the body utilizes C and what happens once the body's repleted, it has enough vitamin C, that it really only takes about 200 milligrams to keep that status, that vitamin C status. Unless, of course, there are other mitigating circumstances. Vitamin C is very protective to the gut. There are other groups of people with particular types of sensitivities or proclivities who would be needing more vitamin C, particularly people who are poor and undernourished. But you say that it isn't necessary to take it more than once a day. And that really threw me for a loop, because I thought that, especially under stress and with our oxidative stress being breathing animals, that that the vitamin C does its job and then isn't able to help out as well later on, so that you need to take it more than once a day. You're saying no?
Well, so yes, vitamin C is highly regulated. Linus Pauling took 18 grams a day, But we have now done, or not necessarily we, people at the NIH, Mark Levine and his colleagues at the National Institutes of Health, have done a lot of pharmacokinetic studies on vitamin C. And from that, we know that you really cannot absorb much more than 200 to maybe 400 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And once you are repleted, once your tissues are saturated with vitamin C, you can't really take up more than what's already in your body. Plus, any excess that's still making it into your body will be excreted in the urine. All of this is to say that vitamin C metabolism is very tightly regulated, both at the level of absorption and at the level of tissue distribution, and then eventually at the level of excretion from your body. So if you take 18 grams in a single dose, and this is a person who is already saturated with vitamin C, very little of that 18-gram dose is being absorbed into the body and into the tissues. And what is absorbed and circulates in the blood, most of that is excreted again because you have a urinary threshold and you can't exceed a certain concentration of vitamin C in your bloodstream.
Yeah, I understand. Let me just let people know again that you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is sitting by me, and we are on the phone with Balz, B-A-L-Z, Frey, F-R-E-I, from the Linus Pauling Institute. He is a biochemist and biophysicist and director of Linus Pauling Institute, and he's a professor. And we're discussing the flaws in vitamin research, and we took a little side path to talk about vitamin C.
Can I add just quickly, you said that, you know, with all the oxidative stress and all other challenges that we are facing, the vitamin requirements, especially vitamin C requirements, because it is an antioxidant, may be higher.
That's right.
Depending on inter-individual differences. You mentioned that in your introduction, there are big differences from one individual to the next. In different life stages, you may have increased needs for vitamin C. Older adults, we know, need more vitamin C to become saturated. People who smoke, people who are suffering from infectious diseases, have inflammatory conditions.
And cancer.
And cancer, of course. All of these individuals consume vitamin C or use it up much more rapidly. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you need to replete it with larger doses and more often. So, you know, when I'm saying that 200 milligrams is enough, you're talking about completely healthy individuals, kind of what the RDA, you know, the recommended dietary allowance, talks about. This is not for people with certain conditions. This is supposedly the minimum requirement for healthy people to maintain saturation of vitamin C in their bodies.
Well, and I will confess to being an advocate of mega vitamin dosing, and I have read lots of research about why that might be a good idea. And I don't like one of the ways that vitamin supplementation gets attacked is the expensive urine argument. Yeah. And that the problem with that argument is that no pharmaceutical would work.
Yeah.
If we were really urinating everything out and nothing was working. And it's very important what you said, which is that I don't know anybody who is a completely healthy person. I mean, there are people whose diet is so rich in fruits and vegetables and good, you know, eat lots of tomatoes and things like that. And so they're getting vitamin C in their food, and they're not under stress. But I don't know those people. So, but, you know, I do remember a very interesting study, which I should have gotten my hands on to cite for you, but I will tell you it, and it may be familiar to you. There was a study where supposedly they took a number of firefighters, and before they left to go fight a fire, they infused them with 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C. And then when they came back, they checked their levels after they were in this very stressful situation, hot and cold and really stressful.
Yeah.
And there was no measurable amount of vitamin C left. Now, there's problems there, as we'll discover as we go now into what's wrong with all these methods of testing. But that seems to speak to the idea that if you're under stress, and who isn't these days, taking vitamin C in higher doses than 200 and repleting it a couple times a day might just be really inexpensive insurance.
No, I totally agree with that.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, and you know, the whole argument of expensive urine, I think, is ridiculous, because vitamins, if you're talking about vitamins and minerals, they're not expensive at all compared to any pharmaceutical drug. Vitamins are dirt cheap, so the argument that you are wasting money to me is completely bogus. I do agree absolutely that if you're under increased oxidative stress or increased stress in general, again, your vitamin C requirements will be much higher. You know, I've looked at vitamin C levels in many different patient groups, and I was amazed that in patients with adult respiratory distress syndrome who have massive infection and sepsis, there is absolutely no detectable vitamin C in their plasma.
Wow.
Similar to what you're describing here to these firefighters.
Oh.
And most of these people end up, you know, dying of sepsis, but it was amazing that that group of subjects, of patients, had absolutely no detectable vitamin C levels. And then you see in others, like smokers and often overweight or obese people, older adults, they also have lower plasma vitamin C levels. So clearly, depending on your life stage and your personal health status, you will have a higher requirement of vitamin C just to maintain normal healthy levels. People in hospitals in particular, they are often deficient or inadequate in many vitamins and minerals because they are not paying attention to this and they're already under increased stress. You know, being in the hospital undergoing surgery will cause depletion of many of your vitamins and minerals, and then they're not being repleted by giving these subjects multivitamins or feeding them a healthy diet. So, you know, that's kind of a double whammy. You are already under increased stress and all the surgical and every other condition that you're exposed to, and then in addition to that, you're not getting adequate nutrition or adequate micronutrients. So that's a big issue, I think.
Are you saying that lime jello is not nutritious? Oh,
thought no, it was... not exactly.
No. Oh, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
The other thing I know about, of course, and you know about too, is that there are physicians who are starting to use IV intravenous therapies using vitamin C for cancer, but also for, you know, there are people studying this. I think Thomas Levy is one of various people about using IV vitamin C instead of antibiotics, and sometimes it works.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So, the other last thing was that there is a misconception about, there are many misconceptions about vitamin C, like load up when you have a cold, you know, although that is a stress. But the main one is that the vitamin research says, oh, well, look, you know, you take a small amount of vitamin C, you give somebody 50 milligrams of vitamin C, and then it gets damaged because it gives up its electrons because it's an antioxidant. And then you have a damaged reactive oxygen species. You have this damaged molecule in there. And you said, well, it does get a little damage, but it's not serious at all. So,
yeah, so it gets oxidized. When it acts as an antioxidant, that means it gives away electrons. And so ascorbic acid becomes oxidized to what we call dehydroascorbic acid. Now, dehydroascorbic acid, the oxidized form of vitamin C, in the body actually gets very effectively and efficiently recycled to the normal reduced form of vitamin C. There are enzymes that can do that, one called thyroxine reductase, and then there is glutathione, which is another strong antioxidant in our body that we actually can synthesize.
In the liver, which we don't. We don't synthesize C, so...
That's right. We don't synthesize C, and that's why it's a vitamin. We need it from our diet, but glutathione we synthesize in the liver, and that can reduce the oxidized form of vitamin C back to its reduced form. So there is either recycling very quickly, the vitamin C is recycled from its oxidized form. If that doesn't happen, then the oxidized form of vitamin C actually very quickly decomposes. It has a half-life of a few minutes, which means after about 5 minutes, half of your oxidized vitamin C is already gone and forms a number of breakdown products, one of them being oxalic acid, and that's why some people argue that vitamin C may increase the risk of kidney stones because oxalic acid or oxalate is an important component of kidney stones.
And do you think it causes kidney stones?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the contribution of vitamin C is sufficient to increase the risk of kidney stones. People who have had a kidney stone before, who are prone to kidney stones, may want to avoid mega doses of vitamin C, but I think in the general population and consuming just average amounts of vitamin C, it doesn't contribute to kidney stones.
You should give out the website for the Linus Pauling Institute, because if you have kidney stones, you can go and look up what research on vitamins has proven effective for prevention and treatment of kidney stones, among other things.
Yeah.
So it's, I use the website all the time, although I haven't got it memorized. Have you got it memorized?
Yeah. Well, it's very simple. It's lpi.oregonstate.edu. lpi.oregonstate.edu.
Yeah.
And then we have on that website another website that's called Micronutrient Information Center. And if you go to the Micronutrient Information Center, you get information on all the vitamins and minerals and other dietary supplements and some foods and beverages. And we're describing fairly great detail what these vitamins and minerals are doing in your body, how they affect your health, how they might be useful in prevention or even treatment of certain diseases. We talk about dietary sources and then our recommendations at the end of each chapter.
Now, I want to reiterate something that people may or may not have actually heard Dr. Fry say, which is that although the body will saturate at 200 milligrams supplementation a day, that doesn't mean that taking it more frequently and in higher doses might not be protective, which is part of the reason we take vitamins, is to protect ourselves so that we have some margin, and that there are many conditions. You know, for instance, people sometimes are constipated, and if you add two servings of vitamin C at 1,000 milligrams or 800 milligrams a day, that usually abates.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. Anyway, and then...
Yeah, no, that's an important point, especially, you know, if you're thinking about the gastrointestinal tract.
Yeah.
Of course, if you take large gram doses, again, most of it just passes through and is not being absorbed. But you have the 18 grams going through your GI tract, and that in and of itself can have protective effects. And in fact, with respect to cancer, there is quite a lot of evidence that vitamin C can protect against different cancers in your GI tract, esophagus and then stomach and maybe even colon cancer. So you have different parts of your GI tract that are protected from vitamin C as it passes through. Although, again, a lot of it may not be absorbed into the circulation, you do have it in your body for a certain time.
Well, and most people don't, to do what we might call a vitamin C flush, which I find rather uncomfortable myself, you don't need 18 grams. Most people don't. You know, if you took, one thing I did once was I ate something that I'm highly allergic to. I'm very, very sensitive to dairy, and without realizing it, I consumed something with dairy. And I went home and I took 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any gastrointestinal symptoms, which to me means that it counterbalanced, it somehow stopped the reaction.
Yeah.
So it was quite amazing. You know, it was a highly stressful situation, and I didn't have a bad effect from it. So I would say if you wanted to do a flush, 10,000 or 10, you know, 10 grams would be sufficient.
Yeah, there's the tolerable upper intake level.
Bowel tolerance, yeah.
Yeah, the bowel tolerance. So the Institute of Medicine that comes up with the recommended dietary allowance and all the other dietary reference intakes also has a tolerable upper intake level, or UL. Now, for vitamin C, that's 2,000 milligrams, because they argue that some individuals may experience gastrointestinal disturbances if they take more than 2 grams a day.
Some people do, some people don't.
Some
it depends on how much they need.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. But you know, what was amazing to me, when they were trying to find some adverse effects of vitamin C, you know, this was the only one that they could come up with to justify a tolerable intake level.
So, it makes you gassy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But which tells you, even if you take 20 grams or more, there are no adverse effects. And that's often what the medical community argues. Well, these vitamins in very high doses are dangerous. Well, maybe for one or two specific vitamins, that may be true. But for vitamin C, if you take gram doses, there's certainly no adverse effects, and most likely you get a lot of benefits out of it.
And lastly, you don't have to spend a lot of money on vitamin C, because ascorbic acid, the most simple form of it, is just fine. But
right.
People sometimes like the calcium ascorbate or the sodium ascorbate because it is a little easier.
Sure.
It's basic. So is there any disadvantage to taking calcium? Well, calcium, then you've got to figure in how much calcium, extra calcium you're taking, because calcium needs to be not above a certain amount. And then sodium ascorbate, any thoughts? Any reason not to use it?
Yeah, well, sodium is not necessarily what you want, but it's such a small amount compared to, you know, the gram doses of sodium you eat every day from your other diet. It doesn't make a big contribution. So it doesn't really make a difference. I think if you are concerned about acidity, take any of those sodium or other mineral salts of vitamin C. By the way, we do have a fairly extensive chapter on our micronutrient information center that specifically talks about different forms of vitamin C.
So the website again is?
That's the micronutrient information.
Yeah, LPI.
No, it's just lpi.oregonstate.edu.
Yeah, okay.
Then it's /info center if you want to go directly to the micronutrient information center.
And you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness, and we're speaking on the phone with Balz, B-A-L-Z, Frei, F-R-E-I. He is the director of the Linus Pauling Institute, among many things. He's also a professor. We're talking about flawed vitamin research. We're going to take a brief musical break. We will post the Linus Pauling Institute website on our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org.